Okay, good evening. I wanted to revisit a topic that we've spoken about in the past and to maybe explore some additional angles to. It's a topic that was the subject of Daf Yomi in the past few days and always is a little bit shocking and brings up much discussion. And it appears in Shas a number of times, but the recent Daf Yomi is perhaps the most often cited. The sugya in Bav Metzia and Daf Nun Ches and Daf Nun Tes of Halbanus Pnei Chaver or Barabim, and it's also now we're in Sfiras HaOmer, so the issue of kavod for other people is very much prominently on our minds, and the source for the prohibition of embarrassing people is actually two sources. Two Isurim that are involved, and they are going to be in the Parsha in the next coming weeks. So we're kind of in between all of the premises here, all of the foundations for this Isur. So coming up next week is Parsha's Kedoshim, and that's where we find the Mitzvah of Tochacha, and the Gemara Maseches Erechin tells us that the reason that Pasuk ends with the phrase Lo Sisa Lo Chet is because you may have thought that you should keep going with the tochacha filu yishtan epanav, that even if the impact would be that the person's face would change color, even if you would humiliate them. And therefore, the Torah emphasizes lasisa lefchait, that that's an exception, that you're not supposed to give tochacha in a way that humiliates people. And as the Rambam explains, this is the style you sometimes find in the Torah, that you learn a lesson from the extreme, that even when you have a mitzvah to give mussar, and you may have thought, well, then it's okay to embarrass somebody, it's not okay then, so all the more so when that's not the situation, when you don't have that defense and that good motive, so all the more so, there's certainly no heter to embarrass someone. So that's one of the sources. But the sugya in Bav Metzia is coming from the prohibition of honah. That's the topic of the fourth parak of Bav Metzia, and that is a pasuk, a few pasukim in Parshas Bahar, coming up soon afterwards. So we are in the midst of all the different makoros of these prohibitions, and what I'd like to focus on tonight especially is the comparison that the recent daf brought that is so shocking. And the question of what to do with it is a major brouhaha and continues ad hayom hazeh, because the Sfarim have a very, very hard time knowing just what to do with the implications of the sugya, and it's very much an unsettled matter. And we've talked about it in the past, some of the nafkaminas, and I wanted tonight just to go into a little bit more detail of how the discussion unfolds in the earlier Sfarim, but also how it continues to go on in the contemporary Sfarim, and to maybe suggest a little bit of a way of looking at it and how we can internalize some of the messages that come out from it, especially for this Tekufa of Sfira and for all of the year round as well. So the question of what to do with the comparison, the Gemara draws this association between Halbanus Pnei Chaveru Berabim, whether or not Rabim, the idea of there being a public setting, is that a crucial clause there? It was the Isser specifically when it's happening Barabim, or is the Chumrah specifically when it's happening Barabim? That's somewhat of a discussion, but certainly it's taken as part of the phrase, so we'll use it as part of the phrase here. That Halbanus Pnei Chaveru Barabim, the Gemara compares to Shfichas Damim, to murder. And the Gemara gives a physiological clue that just like the blood drains from the face when somebody is humiliated, so there's a spilling of blood in that sense, a shvichas damim in a very literal sense. So too, we can call it a shvichas damim, it's like murder, and that's an appropriate association. So presumably we mean more than just that type of hyper-literally, but that there is something more in the comparison here. So much so that the Gemara seems to draw the conclusion that there is actually a halacha of Mesiris Nefesh, that there is a halacha of Yeharig V'Al-Yavur. And that's because the Gemara talks about the story of Tamar, which Psukim relate in Parshas Vayeshev, and the Gemara doesn't add that much except to call attention to what seems to be going on there, that here Yehuda is on putting Tamar in trial, and she is pregnant with twins, actually, from Yehuda. And Yehuda doesn't realize that he's the father and that she had orchestrated this in order to fulfill the obligation of Yibum, and that she was innocent. And Yehuda thought that she had gone with somebody else and that she was violating the commitment to Yibum, and therefore she deserves to be put to death. And apparently she was willing to let that happen. She wasn't willing to defend herself at the cost of embarrassing him. So she had the evidence that he was indeed the father, and she allowed him to choose to come forward when he saw the evidence. And the implication is that had he not done so, then she would have allowed the execution to proceed. And the Gemara draws this conclusion that noyach lo liadam, that it's preferable for a person lahapil atzmei lekivshin shalesh, that he should let himself be thrown into a fiery furnace v'al yalbin p'nei chaver b'rabim, rather than to embarrass somebody else in public. So here you have this comparison being drawn from murder to embarrassment, shvichas damim, and humiliation. So you have on the one hand that statement, which maybe you could take as some kind of a guzma, as some kind of a hyperbole. But at the same time, in that same passage over there, the Gemara is giving you an application that would perhaps flow from a very literal reading of that comparison. In the same way that, even though the Gemara is giving you a different way of getting to that conclusion, but it seems to be consistent with that type of a comparison, that just like when it comes to murder, there is a halacha of Yeharig V'Yavor, that you're not allowed to commit that avera, even if that's what's necessary to save your life. So the same rule would apply to embarrassing somebody else. So is that indeed the case? So that would seem to be a very severe conclusion. And this is a topic of intense debate, maybe in the Rishonim, although the Rishonim have to be interpreted, and certainly in the later Svarim, and it's something that is ongoing. It's just for the sake of clarity and to not leave anybody misimpressions, I think it's important to emphasize, we'll say, don't try this at home, that we should emphasize that this is not something where we can really advocate a policy of Mesiras Nefesh, but we'll try to clarify by the end what we think the message here actually is and why you do get that impression from some of the sugyas and some of the Rishonim and some of the Achronim, even though certainly there are others who are very strongly arguing otherwise. But what exactly is the basis for all of this impression, and how can you find a path to navigate through it all? So, first of all, you have these sugyas, and it's not the only sugya. So there is a sugya in Ksubis and Daf Samech Zayin, besides the fact that this passage appears in a number of places. There's a Gemara in Brachos, a Gemara in Psachim, and a Gemara in Sota, but there's also a Gemara in Ksubis, which gives a different story also, which also seems a little bit dramatic and extreme in terms of Marukva and his wife and the risks they were willing to take in order to avoid embarrassing someone. There's also a Medrash that suggests that Yosef exposed himself to vulnerability of possibly being murdered by his brothers when he revealed himself to them, and that he did so, he sent away his bodyguards because he didn't want to embarrass them, so he exposed himself to that risk in order to avoid embarrassing them. And there's a Machlokas to the Gemara, Machlokas to the Medrash, whether that was the case or whether that was appropriate or not. So there are a few possible sources that seem to indicate that. And in terms of the Rishonim, so there is a question how to read the various Rishonim. And not much of it is explicit. In order to find the Rishonim who are really clearly taking sides, so you only have really on one side and the other, you have Rabbeinu Yonah and the Meiri. So Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva seems to be the one who most clearly advocates that what we have here is a case of Abizrayu de Gili Arayus, that this is something which is a broader umbrella category of murder. That's what the Gemara is telling us, that this is an aspect of murder, and therefore it's included in that heading and in its dinim. And that, therefore, that's how this conclusion flows from there, on the one hand. And on the other camp, the one who's explicit is the Meiri. The Meiri in a few places, because this Gemara appears in a few places, so the Meiri says different ways of phrasing it, Derech Sachus, Derech Azhara, Derech Agada, basically that this is hyperbole, that this is a way of making a point of just how extreme this Aveira is, but not necessarily telling us that this is actually a Halacha L'maisa policy. In terms of the Achronim, and we're going to come back to other Rishonim in a moment, so there are a number of Achronim who took this issue up, and some of them have concluded L'chumra. Most prominently, perhaps, is a series of tshuvas of the Binyan Siyan, of Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, most specifically Kufayin Beis, and we'll come back to that in a little more detail also. Happens to be in the context of a number of other interesting tshuvas of his, and we'll come back to that in a little more detail. A few later Sfarim as well. And there were other sources that are among the Rishonim that are open to interpretation. So again, in terms of in both camps, so the Rambam, for example, is often assumed to be of the camp that says it's not actually Yehariv Al Yavor, mostly by silence, because the Rambam doesn't bring it as a din of Yehariv Al Yavor, and the Rambam does rule that anything that's not the Feirish, explicitly Yehariv Al Yavor, one is not permitted to be Moser Nefesh, so one presumably would draw the conclusion that he doesn't allow or require one to be Moser Nefesh for this particular Aveira. That's how many assume, but not everyone. But a major part of the discussion is a Tosus in the Maseches Sota on Daf Yud. And that's a very tricky thing to figure out. That Tosus there discusses why it is that the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin Dalet and a few other places, the Gemara tells us the rule of Yehariv Al Yavor, that there's the big three, that there are the Averos that one is obligated to be Moser Nefesh for, Shfichas Damim and Gilui Arayus and Avodah Zarah. So according to this assumption, that we're going to put Halbanos Pirich Averu Rabim there also, so it's not just three, it's four. So how come we don't have that on the list also? So Tosfos says, maybe it's because, what Tosfos seems to say, is maybe it's because we're only counting things that are beferish, and this is not beferish, this is not explicit. So many have assumed that what this Tosfos is saying, and probably this is the, if you count up all of the words that have been written in citation of this Tosfos, the vast majority of them take the assumption that what Tosfos means is that this is indeed the din, that Tosfos is taking this position that this is Yehariv Al Yavor, and that's what it means in taking this answer to this question. And Tosfos is then brought into that camp together with Rabbeinu Yonah as saying that that's the halacha, that we have a rule of Yehariv Al Yavor for Halbanos Pnei Chaver Barabim. So that's how many assume. Prominent among those Achronim who say like this, there are many, and this is a topic in general, as I say, the literature is ongoing. So the Sfarim that talk about Halacha and the Parsha, this is a very popular topic, and that's a genre that is constantly expanding. So many of them take this up, and this topic is not only interesting, but so difficult, and also the narrative is so difficult, and we'll try to say a little bit more about that in the next few minutes. So this is a topic that all of these forums discuss, and many of them have a very, very hard time coming to a conclusion. But if you're going to add up all the words written in this Tosfos, it's widely assumed that that's Tosfos' position, that this is the Yehariv Al Yavor. And among prominent Achronim who took this position the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav, in his notes to Sota, he wrote, published from the Brisker Rav and all the Kachim Masechtas, meaning even the ones that are not in Seder Kachim, but talk about Kachim, so Sota makes that list also. So he writes on this Tosis that Tosis is trying to answer the question of if this was only Midas Chasidus, if this wasn't actually a requirement, so then it shouldn't be allowed. So it must be that it is an actual requirement, and therefore Tosis has to have the question of why isn't it listed, and therefore needs to come up with an answer. So essentially it's a brief comment to the Brisker Rav, but what he seems to be taking as a given is that there is a conclusion of Tosis that it is Yehar V'Yavor. Another prominent Posek who, just in one line, in a different context, talking about actually one of the frequent contexts of Truvis about humiliation. There's a whole literature about the impact of humiliation in the sugyas of, in the details of broken shiduchim. That's where this comes up a lot. So in the Truvis of Marsham in Chelek Hay in Simen Chavches, so he has a Truva there about whether it's permitted to break up a shidduch actually for Tavol Shabir Achasid. People discover that they have the same name as the mother in the whole story. So he talks about how it's not recommended to break up a shidduch for that. And he talks about the impact of humiliation. And just a throwaway line there, he says that Tosis and Sota and Daf Yud has said that it's Yehar V'Yavor. But he also has a part of that line which takes for granted something else, which kind of skips over another complexity here. And the problem is that as much as you would have thought that the impression of this Tosis is that there actually is a din of Yehar V'Yavor, because the easiest answer to the question of why isn't it listed among the big three is because it's not Yehar V'Yavor, it's not a literal comparison, that would have been the big easiest answer. The problem is, there's also another easy answer, and Tosfos doesn't seem to give that answer either. And that is that it's not on the list either because it's not actually Yehar V'Yavor, but if you do want to say it is actually Yehar V'Yavor, it's not on the list because it is on the list. Because if it's a subset of Shvichas Damim, so then it doesn't need its own spot. So it could be the Gemara already includes it in Shvichas Damim, the big three is already there. And this is a part of Shvichas Damim that doesn't need its own spot. So that would seem to be the second easiest answer for Tosfos to give. So why does Tosfos not give that? So that's a pretty glaring question too. Now, the Marsham kind of skips over that because that one line in the Marsham, he takes both things for granted. He says, Tosfos is of the opinion that Habanas Panim is Yehar V'Yavor and Abizrayu Derutzicha. So he assumes both. But the point is that Tosfos doesn't say that second part. And that is a pretty glaring question. And in fact, the Binyan Tzion in the Tshuva that we mentioned before asks that question on Tosfos, and is therefore the opinion that Tosfos, even if Tosfos does say it's Yehar V'Yavor, which maybe the Binyan Tzion might think, but not for the reason of Rabbeinu Yonah. So it doesn't necessarily agree with the classification of Halbanus Panim as equal to Ritzicha. So that's something which is a issue in terms of understanding Tosfos. Two parts of it. Does Tosfos actually equate? Basically, both the assumptions of the Marsham have to be proven. They're both not necessarily in evidence. The second one more than the first. Does Tosfos actually equate Habanus Panim to Shvichas Damim? And one way or another, does Tosfos also come to the conclusion that there is actually a din of Yehar V'Yavor? So among the Gedolei Achronim who may bring this into question is the Netziv. The Netziv has a somewhat cryptic comment on his Chidushim in Shas in the Merome Sada in his Chidushim Tosota. So he just has also a brief comment about this Tosas. But he says that this Tosas is Shitoso on Avodah Zarah. That Tosas on Avodah Zarah and Daf Chav Zayin is of the opinion that Abizrayu of the Yahar Vayavars, Abizrayu of the Big Three, doesn't have the halacha of Yahar Vayavar. In other words, the halacha of Mesiras Nefesh only applies to the actual Avera and not to that which is in the broader umbrella of the Avera. So apparently Tosfos' general view is that if something is an Abizrayu of that category, it wouldn't have a din of Yahar Vayavar, and then the Nitziv says, so that's why Tosfos has to say what he says here. So what does the Nitziv mean by that? So, it's not 100% clear, but some assume that what the Nitziv means is he's saying that Tosfos is therefore not of the conclusion that it actually is Yahar Vayavar. That taking the position that Abizrayu of Shvichas Damim includes Halbanus Pnei Chavei Barabim, for Tosfos wouldn't take you down the path of concluding that it is a Yahar Vayavar. So therefore, what? So therefore, maybe Tosfos therefore doesn't come to that practical conclusion. So how do you read Tosfos? It's a little bit tricky, but it would have to be a little bit forced. That's what Tosfos is saying, that it's not on the list because it's not explicitly part of Ritzicha, and therefore it's not actually a din of Yahar Vayavar. There are those who suggest that maybe no, that's not what the Nitziv means. What the Nitziv means is maybe closer to what the Binyan Siyan means, that Tosfos does hold that it is Yahar Vayavar, but for a different reason, not because it's Abizrayu, and therefore can't give the answer of Abizrayu, and that's what the Nitziv is pointing out, that Abizrayu wouldn't have taken you down that path, so Tosfos doesn't give what would otherwise have been the obvious answer, and he's explaining the Lashon of Tosfos. So there's some debate about what the Nitziv is trying to get at, but it leaves us still very unsure what to do with this Tosfos. Is the Tosfos really putting its firepower behind this position of Yahar Vayavar, which would be certainly a pretty shocking position for practical purposes? So if it really is the view of the Balei Tosfos, that would be pretty significant. So to note that there is some debate about that is important to appreciate, and that seems to be the case. So this being one of the major Rishonim who is recruited for the side of that view, and the fact that there is some question as to how to interpret it, certainly there are glaring questions in terms of what it's trying to say, so that's important to appreciate. So on top of that, there are many other questions that the Sfarim struggle with, both in terms of just how to take the whole message here. So on the one hand, there are these sugyas which seem to be giving tremendous chumrah to the Avera. And it's not just these gemaras, but of course we know that there are other gemaras in other contexts that put tremendous chumrah on the whole idea of embarrassing people. So we know, for example, the gemaras in Gittin and Daphne and Zion and throughout that talk about the Hurban and say Kama Gedola Kocha Shel Busha, that the whole Hurban with Kamsa Bar Kamsa was created because of the power of humiliation and apparently the power of the Avera of humiliation. So there's an essay from Ruven Grzovsky that was published recently in a journal called B'Nestiva Sahalacha. I don't know where they got it from. So Ruven Grzovsky died a long time ago, and this is attributed to him. I don't know where it was published originally. It doesn't say where they got it from originally, but they have there this piece attributed to Ruven Grzovsky, where he says it's also Gemaras like that, which seem to lead to the conclusion that there is a Chiyuv of Mesiras Nefesh, because if this kind of action can bring about the Churban, can bring about other kinds of mega apocalyptic tragedies, so then you could see how severe it is. So on the one hand, you have sugyas like that, but on the other hand, you have these glaring questions. So you have, on the one hand, issues just with the Svara that many of the Svarim struggle with, that Lamaisa, to say that you should give up your life in order to prevent this Avera, so that is, you know, as they say, in general with such things, it's a permanent solution to what seems to be a temporary problem, because Lamaisa, this, as terrible as it is, will presumably pass and doesn't have the same permanence as actual death. And the Svara of Yehareva Yavor for Ritzicha, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that, my chazdis, how do you come to the conclusion that your blood is redder than the other person's blood, that you should take his life for your life? So that Svara doesn't seem to apply here. And also, there are glaring questions in the narrative, which some of them are questions on the Chumash, some of them are questions in the Gemara's emphasis of the Chumash. But first of all, are we saying that Tamar was not allowed to act in her own defense? As somebody who's on trial on a capital crime is not allowed to defend herself if that's going to involve embarrassing somebody else? It's very hard to assume that to be the case. The Prima Gadim has a discussion about this in a Sefer Tevis Goma, where he suggests that she was acting with Nimishar Sadin, but that brings many other complexities. Especially as the Sfarim also note that even if she was willing to take that on for herself, but what about her twins? And we have such chumra that's associated with protecting the unborn. So how could she be willing to waive that, to waive the lives of her two unborn children? This Mesiras Nefesh is also something that the Sfarim are very concerned about. And they also ask, and this is something that Binyan Siyan talks about too, that why didn't Yehuda have the halacha of a rodef here? And therefore, Shita should have been allowed to shoot him with a gun. You know, so even if you want to say that embarrassing somebody is like murder, if you want to say it's literal murder, she should be allowed to commit literal murder against Yehuda, who was trying to literally murder her, who was trying to actually cause her death. So that's a question that Binyan Siyan already brought up, and he gave an answer which others find very unsatisfactory. He said, well, he wasn't trying to do it himself. He was trying to bring about a ruling that would have had other people do it, and that kind of a situation is not the kind of rodef that you can kill somebody to stop, but it's not clear why that should be. Others didn't necessarily find that to be the answer. The Maram Shif talks about this here in Bav Metzia, and he suggests that it wasn't really up to her whether to embarrass him or not, because he could resist. So either he's going to admit it whether he wants to or not. So maybe that somehow plays into it. In his comments to Ksubis, he has different answers. It's all very difficult from that perspective. And there are those who suggest that maybe it has to do with the fact, there's a whole discussion about this in the contemporary Sefer called Uri V'Yishi, where he suggests also that maybe it's because Tamar set this whole story up, so maybe therefore she can't call Yehuda a rodef under those circumstances because she basically entrapped him. That's hard to see that as a satisfactory answer. So that also is a part of what's very difficult here. So you have the narrative is very difficult. You have the questions of the Svara applying here is very difficult. And a lot of back and forth. I should just note also about the question of whether Tosfos means what the Tosfos and Sota, whether it means what it's claimed to mean, and just how it seems just so shocking to accept it. So I saw recently that in the Sefer Otzer Machmadim, he quotes a letter there that in the journal Har Amor, there's a letter from the Adaris that he says that it says that the Adaris asked the Mariel Diskin about what to do about the staff, about the whole suggestion that it's Yehar V'Yavor, and that the Mariel Diskin said there's no way it's literal. There's no way, it just can't be. And then they showed him the Tosis and Sota, and he said he was shocked that he missed that Tosis, but he said, still, he didn't change his mind. So that's everything together. Basically, he seemed to read that Tosfos indeed as taking the position that it's Yehar V'Yavor, But the Svara still is so compelling that that can't be true, that he wasn't willing to change his mind, Lamaisa, and to accept that. So the idea that it could be a hard way avor despite his questions, so some of these contemporary Svarim have different ways of trying to address that in light of these questions, and they suggest that maybe you have to understand the Svar of Harvah Yavor to be different than the logic of Maichazis, like the Kesef Mishnah suggests, that really the whole notion of Harvah Yavor is a Kabbalah, is a tradition that the Chachamim had, and that the logic of Maichazis is not the real reason. It's just how the Gemara explains it. Or maybe it's the fact that you find certain absolutes the same way that you're not going to say that we'll save the life of a young person at the expense of an older person because the young person has more years to live. So we don't apply any kind of logic or analysis in Pikuach Nefesh. So therefore, it's true in the other direction also. But again, these are very difficult. You know, they also note that if you find that there is a heter for tochacha, we started off by noting that the Gemara in Erechin says that tochacha is one of the sources to show that there's a prohibition of halbanos panim even in the case of tochacha. But the Rishonim explained that that's when it's ben adam l'chavero, but sometimes ben adam l'makom, there is a heter for halbanos panim if that's necessary. But the same svarim point out, but if it's really ritzicha, so then you can't kill somebody for the purpose of tocha. So we have to again assume that it's not literally killing people. So this is also a part of the whole back and forth and a part of the great struggle that these svarim have in trying to work this out. Some suggest that if you're going to say that it's Yehareg Vayavor, that it's not because you're actually saying that it's literally like murder, but it's a way of saying that you simply are not allowed to save yourself at somebody else's expense, similar to the tshuva of the Radbaz that says you wouldn't be asked to cut off a limb to save somebody else's life. So too, that it's not necessary to go so far as to say it's actually equal to murder, to say that you're not entitled to make somebody else sacrifice even to save your life. You can't make them cut off their limb to save your life. So too, you can't make them go through humiliation in order to save your life. So that's what some contemporary Svarim suggest. It's interesting to note that this often gets overlooked. That was really the Mahalach of the Binyan Siyum. The Binyan Siyum, again, is one of the Achronim who's most classical, who's associated with this position, that it actually is a Harvah Yavor. That's really the path that he was coming from. And I mentioned, alluded to earlier, that that tshuva was in the context of other outlier tshuvas of his. So he has a position, a different issue, but related, that was very controversial, and that he was very much a Das Yachid, that he is of the opinion that Nivul Hames is something that can't be allowed even for Pikuach Nefesh. So, for example, we talk about organ transplants, and the whole controversy today usually has to do with the brain death issue. But the assumption is that if we didn't have to worry about the status of brain death, if we knew that the person was definitely dead, l'chol adeos, so then to take an organ from a dead body to save somebody's life would certainly be mutter, despite the fact that nivul hames is otherwise prohibited. But b'makom pikuach nefesh, it should be mutter, pikuach nefesh should override that. So there was a minority opinion, the Binyan Siyun, who thought that that was considered gezel from the mace, and that that's not permitted because of pikuach nefesh. That was a minority opinion. More recently, the Tshuvas Dvar Yehoshua agreed with his view, but the vast majority of the Achronim didn't accept that opinion. So it's in that context, it's actually the following tshuva, where he goes on to say that you can't steal from a mace in order to even to save your own life. And he says also that you can't embarrass somebody to save your own life. It's a similar kind of thinking. So, but he says explicitly there, actually, that it's not because he's assuming that there really is a equation between Shvichas Damim and Bizyonus, And he has a little bit of discussion there, actually, that the Gemara often compares one thing to something else. And if you're going to assume that every time something is compared to one of the big three, it's actually equal to that, then you're going to have a lot of new Yahari Vayavars. So it can't be that every time one thing is compared to another thing, it means for all intents and purposes. And so, too, you don't have to think, and maybe you shouldn't think, that Halbanus Pnei Chaver Barabim is actually equal to murder. But nonetheless, he still comes to the conclusion that you can't save yourself at the expense of somebody else's bizyonis, because it's similar to what he said right before that, the previous tshuva, that you can't cut out their organs in order to save your own life, even if they're already deceased. So he himself was already coming from that approach, but not because he necessarily saw it as equal. And there are those who didn't see it as equal and didn't come to that conclusion. So, for example, if you look at the Torah Tamima in Vayeshev, so he writes over there that the whole language of Noach is to say that it's an issue of midos, but it's not absolute halacha. You wouldn't be called Rasha, and it's not an actual Yehari Vayavar. My grandfather, whose yahrzeit was last day of Pesach this past week, is a sefer on the Torah Tamima called Meshivas Nefesh. So he comments there, says probably would be called a Rasha because of all of the language of the Gemara there, but still you could be Mechalik and say it'd be called a Rasha. It's still not necessarily Yehari Vayavar. Similar conclusions to the Torah Tumimah you could find in the Sefer Nachal Eshkol, which is a commentary to the Sefer HaEshkol by Rav Tzvi Benjamin Auerbach. Has a long discussion about this and many of the later Sfarim quotes. Also, Rav Tovi Goldstein, in his Shuvah Seimek Halacha, has a long tshuva also, where he says that this L'maisa is not brought in the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch. We noted before how the Rambam doesn't bring this. And this is very hard to paskin like the Binyan Siyan. There's a similar tshuva like that in the Zecher Simcha of Bamberger. And he says, yes, it is brought in the Rif and the Rush, but they often bring things for the purposes of Agadata. He says there must be a Kavana Amuka, but to actually sacrifice your life for this, that can't be permitted. And you have to assume that that's the actual halacha, that's what they write, that one cannot be moser nefesh for this. The Meshech Chachma has a interesting comment in Sefer Devarim, in the end of Sefer Devarim, the end of the Torah, Mezos HaBracha. He talks there, has a whole discussion about the Hesped for Moshe and why there couldn't be people in Masbid Moshe. And he talks about the difference between before the Torah was given and after the Torah was given, and how things changed. And in the context of that, he talks about how there was more formal halacha after the Torah was given. And he writes there that, for example, that Tamar could volunteer to be Moser Nefesh before the Torah was given. She could volunteer to sacrifice her life not to be Malbin Panim, but after the Torah was given, that would not be a permissible thing to do. There are absolute rules, and one wouldn't be able to take on a decision like that. So if that's the case, which again seems to be a conclusion that is easier to accept la halacha, but you have to then wonder what the Gemara is trying to tell us. So that's something that we have to still address, and we'll try to address in the next few minutes. But we should also note that a part of the whole complexity here is, as the Acharonim also struggle with, and we alluded to a few minutes ago, that are we going to say that you can't pursue justice, you can't defend yourself in court at the cost of exposing the real criminal and therefore embarrassing someone? And even when we're talking about your life is at stake, like Tamar, but what if it's even less than that? What if it's just a monetary case? You're not allowed to pursue monetary justice, which is inevitably going to embarrass. If somebody's a ganev and you call them out, you're going to embarrass them. So that is a very difficult conclusion. And the Sfarim talk about this at length. And at any point, there was a Tosfos a few weeks ago in Daf Yomi, in Daf Chavav and Midbeis in Eilam Metzius. There's a Tosfos there which talks about the fact that if you have two people alone and one drops a coin, so he's not miyayish when he knows that the other guy is the one who was the only person around, because he's able, Tosa says explicitly, that he knows that he can always get it back because he has the ability to embarrass the other guy in public and demand that he admit to taking it. So apparently that's an acceptable tactic, to embarrass the person who you know has your money. So what's going on here? And there is a lot written about this in that journal we mentioned before of Nesivas Halacha. There's an essay there by Rav Chaim Solomon who talks about the question. He assumes that you presumably can yell if you see somebody stealing something, you can yell to stop him. And he suggests there, well, maybe that's different because the person, by engaging in theft, is causing his own embarrassment, and maybe Yehuda is different because he thought that he was right. But still, it leaves a lot of unanswered questions. And he quotes there from the Sefer Teres Chaim, who has a story from Reb Chaim Brisker, that Reb Chaim Brisker once declined to embarrass somebody who was stealing something because of this, which is also, again, a difficult conclusion. In the Sefer Milui Shlomo, there's a long essay by Shlomo Lorenz. So he has a big discussion about this, and he says you have to assume that to pursue your monetary claims in Beis Din, there isn't any issur of Habanas Pnei Chaver B'Ravim or any other obligation, such as an obligation of being Dam L'Chav Shchus, from the fact that these concepts exist. We have a notion of being Tavei somebody to Din, so it has to be that this is an acceptable thing to do. So what about Yehuda? So what about our Gemara? So maybe it's because he wasn't the Nitba in this case. But when you have a Tevei and a Nitba, when you have the person who you're actually directing your claims at, that's excluded from this whole concept. And he bases this on the Ramban's comments on Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Kedoshim and Sefer Vayikra, the relationship between Losisnas Achicha B'Vavecha and the Chiyah B'Tochecha, that the connection the Ramban explains, that the purpose of Tochecha and its relationship to Losisnas Achicha B'Vavecha is you're not supposed to have hidden hatred in your heart, but if you're angry at somebody, you're supposed to speak it out because maybe then it will clear it up. So when you have an issue with somebody, it's necessary to go through the process of bringing it to light so that you can then have the possibility of addressing it. So that shows you that when you have a target, when you have somebody who's your clear opponent, so then these yisurim don't apply. It's all in the interest of ultimately getting a resolution. So he has a nafkamina, that understanding. He says if you suspect somebody of stealing your stuff, so you can demand to check their bags because he's the target there, he's the opponent. But he says, let's say the guy says, I'm so offended, you want to check my bag, I'll only let you check my bag if you check everybody's bags. So then he says, then you can't do that because the other people, they're not your opponent and they don't have the same heter, which is interesting chiddush. So Reb Shlomo Zalman has comments there. And his comments are also printed in his Tshuvas, in the Menachas Shlomo and Chelik Zimel, in Chelik Gimel, in Siman Kof Hei. So there you can find just Rav Shlomo Zalman's comments, his response to the longer essay that's printed in the Sefer Milui Shlomo. In the Milui Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman's comments are there also. In the Menachas Shlomo, you can only find Rav Shlomo Zalman's comments, you don't know what he's referring to. So he has objections to a lot of these premises, and he says the idea that Yehuda wasn't a Nitba is not the case. Yehuda was causing these major problems for Tamar. He was making her vulnerable, and he was causing her life to be at risk, so that means she has a major taina on him. How could you say that he's not the Nitba? So he doesn't give you any final answers. He just kind of undermines what the Milui Shlomo says. So there's an earlier discussion about this in the 1960s. There was a sefer published called Nesiva Shmuel, of Shmuel Kishalowitz, who also had a correspondence with the Rugged Shaver about his thoughts about this, and he has a very long essay about this where he's trying to figure out this whole question of exposing a ganav so that he will stop, and that's going to inevitably embarrass someone. But he also says it's very impossible to reconcile here because you have our sugya, which seems to say that there is this Isser Harvel Yavor. But on the other hand, how can you not do this? Especially if, to use other prakim from Bava Metzia, if you're a shomer, so then you're obligated to protect somebody's property and do what it takes to stop somebody from stealing it. So if somebody was stealing something that you're obligated to watch, and you're going to hold back so you don't embarrass him, you're going to be violating your Chiyuv Shmira. Are you allowed to do that? So he says that that can't be the case. So he works very hard at trying to figure this out, and he goes through a lot of possibilities. And ultimately, he also tends towards that approach that we mentioned some of the other Sfarim had, that maybe it's about the idea of Hatzalah, that you can't save yourself, the Yehuda, things like that. The idea that there's some kind of martyrdom obligation here is that you can't save yourself at somebody else's expense. And therefore, when the person themselves are stealing from you, so then they are obligated to return it. So that's not called a third party being forced to sacrifice for your Hatzalah. But otherwise, when the person doesn't have an involvement, so then you're not allowed to save yourself at their expense. And in the case of Yehuda, it says Tamar didn't have a heter to save herself at Yehuda's expense, but Yehuda would have had a chiyuv. And in the case of saving your money, so then the Gemara has a concept of Avid and Shtinu Nafshe, that sometimes you're allowed to take steps to save your money from being stolen, or to save other people's money from being stolen. And therefore, you can do things such as this. But again, it comes out very difficult. And the Sefer Das Kanisa al HaTara is a contemporary Sefer. So he suggests that maybe the issue is, in the case of Tamar, that Tamar wouldn't have been believed on her own Ne'amanus. So her only path would have been to shame Yehuda into coming forward on his own. And maybe that's what the issue is, that using embarrassment intentionally as a tool, so that's what you're not allowed to do under any circumstances. But embarrassment that comes memela out of the judicial process, such as searching bags to find something, and that's going to end up embarrassing somebody as a result, so maybe that's okay. But to make an intentional show for the sake of embarrassment, maybe that's what's off limits. So there are various efforts to try to reconcile all of these tensions, and it comes out very difficult, and a lot of places you find the Sfarim basically throwing their hands up, because there's such a difficulty in how to bring all these points together, and such glaring questions. So I think what you have to say is something along the following lines, that on the one hand, those who have brought up the major objections, Misvara and Metzias, very understandable, that to say that you have to actually be Mosen Nefesh in light of the fact that we're not talking about literal death and that we're not talking about permanent death, seems to be a very difficult conclusion. And as we said at the beginning, we would not advocate that. And halacha lemaisa, it's important to stress that we wouldn't tell anyone that they actually should give up their lives in order to avoid this avera. But on the other hand, it's also important to appreciate that it's not completely non-literal either. And that's what you find to a certain degree, not just in Chazal, but elsewhere. And that the comparison to death has a certain reality to it from two perspectives. One is that, Rahman al-Islan, that we know that, unfortunately, it's true, that sometimes people have chosen death rather than humiliation. So what does that mean? It means, first of all, that b'metzias, there is that risk. There is that risk that there could be the reality of death as a possibility. Together with that, even if that isn't an actual possibility, but the fact that that does happen sometimes, means that there is a certain reality that sometimes the pain that is involved could indeed be legitimately compared, if there are those who would indeed choose death rather than go through that pain. Together with that, there are those who maybe wouldn't choose death for themselves rather than go through this, but there certainly are people who have taken other people's lives in order to avoid humiliation, or as a payment, as a vengeance for humiliation. So the notion that there is some kind of actual comparison is not completely from nowhere. And in fact, the words we use in English of mortified, you know, comes from the Latin mortis, and meaning dead, and facere, to make. And the idea that there is a relationship to actual death has some basis to it. So I think what Chazal and many sources outside of Chazal are calling our attention to is the fact that there is some tangency here to genuine death, and that we're dealing here with some very high-stakes behavior. So practically speaking, what does that mean for us? So it doesn't mean, practically speaking, that we can actually advocate Mesiras Nefesh, because, first of all, that is a permanent solution and one that we're not permitted to volunteer for in general. But also, and this is something which was addressed in an article mentioned in the past, of Pinchas Levinson in one of the rabbinical journals has an article which he discusses this, that maybe this is also the intention of the notion of Noachlo, that clearly we have to also recognize that the idea of saying humiliation is equal to death, it can't mean that every humiliation is equal to death. It means there's the potential for humiliation to equal that. But clearly there are lower degrees of embarrassing experiences that are not going to be on that level. So practically speaking, to say that any time anyone's embarrassed at all is going to call for any kind of extreme standards is a very difficult conclusion to come to. So by necessity, it's a way of highlighting just how high the stakes are and saying that we can't actually advocate actual irrevocable decisions that would otherwise be called for when real murder is involved. But to appreciate just how close we are to that kind of territory, and therefore to recognize that everything short of that should be employed in order to provide, in order to prevent that, and to recognize that this is something that should be taken with great seriousness, I think that is a part of what Chazal were getting at. And that, therefore, also to appreciate that maybe there is some degree of voluntary risks that could be permitted when the circumstances are extreme enough to assess that that's what's going on. So a normal situation of humiliation, you wouldn't think that this is going to trigger these dinim. But there could be, theoretically, a circumstance, maybe Tamar felt that that was the circumstance, that here you have somebody of Yehuda's stature and a scandal of this level, that this would be an enduring humiliation that would be so much to bear that she's going to take this risk. And taking the risk is also probably relevant, even though there's some discussion as to what exactly the Messias was there, because it's probably also not talking about necessarily actually definitely dying, but taking a risk of death and saying that, okay, the possibility of tremendous, long-lasting emotional harm to the other person of the type that could drive them to death or could be of a pain similar to death is so great that I'll take my chances and hope that the Yeshua will come from somewhere else. And that might be a legitimate way, at least to think theoretically. And that's something also to take with the point of the Meshech Chachma we made before, and we raised the question that if it wasn't true after Matan Torah, so why even mention it? So the point could be that Chazal are telling us that, yes, l'halacha l'maisa, after Matan Torah, we have to be much more careful about employing that. But the point of the story is to make the point that there was a rationality to it, that somebody could make this decision that's reasonable on some level, that there is such potential devastation here to another person that it makes sense to say, listen, I'll do whatever I can to avoid putting somebody else in that position, even if it means I have to really take a big risk and hope that there'll be a salvation in a different way, in a perhaps miraculous way, because the stakes here are so high in that kind of circumstance. But to say as an absolute policy, okay, any kind of humiliation is always going to be a harvah yavor, that's not going to be a reasonable, practical policy, and la halacha, that can't be. And that could perhaps also explain some other things. So, for example, in Rabbi Yashiv's Ha'aros, on the Sefer on Bava Metzia. So he raises the question that the Gemara in Brachos, the sugi of Kavod Abrios, the Gemara asks, the Gemara says over there, there's a din that if somebody's wearing shatnez, so he discovers that he's wearing shatnez in public, so he has to take it off a filu b'shuk. So how could you say that he's going to have to take off his clothing in public when he sees the shatnez? So that's going to be embarrassing. So he's got to do that to avoid that iser. But here we're saying that it's like death. You don't have to kill yourself to avoid shatnez. So how come you have to take off your clothes? Isn't that embarrassing? So it's a question he has there. And his son-in-law, Rav Zilberstein, in the Chashukei Chemet Tebrachos, he has a chiluk, it's hard to understand. It's machalik between Boshas HaGuf and Busha Ruchnias. Hard to know exactly what that chiluk means, but I think it fits into what we're saying here, that the kind of embarrassment the person has from having to be undressed in public, so that's a tremendous discomfort in the moment, but that's not the kind of thing that 20 years later you're thinking about and that follows you around forever. That's the kind of thing that it's temporary. But to have a scandal associated with you, to have something that people are going to talk about forever and it's going to be written in your obituary, so that's the kind of thing that people sometimes choose death rather than have to endure. So there are different, categorically different types of experiences that we could be talking about here. And yes, that kind of situation that Gemara is talking about, poshto v'afilu b'shuk, that's incredibly awkward, and nobody would want that, but that's not in the same kind of category here that potentially could be the Mesiras Nefesh type of situation. But the Mesiras Nefesh kind of situation is also something which is really theoretical for us, but tells us that to be aware of that possibility means we're going to stop short of actual Mesiras Nefesh, but to have an appreciation of just how high the stakes are here, so that when we don't have to go that far, but we can be sensitive to how high a severity there is, we'll do everything short of that in order to avoid that. So perhaps these are some emerging perspectives that can come out of everything after the dust settles and leave us with some takeaways here that, yes, as a matter of policy, again, to actually be Moser Nefesh, do not try this at home. This is not something that we can say as a rule for any kind of embarrassment, certainly not as a across-the-board policy to avoid the Avera of Hablanis Panim, but it helps us to appreciate just what is potentially involved in somebody else's dignity being compromised, and to recognize just how severe that is, and that that's something that we have to take every reasonable step to protect. And certainly in this time of Sfiras HaOmer, when we find that there was such terrible consequences for the reality of even these great students of Rabbi Akiva not being Noe Kavod Zelaza, to appreciate just what is the cost of Kavod and what is the value of the dignity of the other and how precious and how dear that has to be to us, is perhaps one of the tremendous enduring messages of the sugya and a crucial takeaway for us as we continue this period of Sfira. So we will stop here. I wish everyone a successful week, a successful period of Sfira Somer. We should learn all of its lessons with Toelis. And maybe over the next few weeks, we'll maybe continue some of these things also, especially in line with some of the sugyas in Daf Yomi and the Parshas talking about these things, and maybe some of the other dinim and anos devarim maybe we'll talk about over the course of the next few weeks. And we'll talk about Ribbis a little bit also, because it's also coming up both in the Parshas and the Dafim, and we'll try to cover some of those in these upcoming weeks.